This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for June 27th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Supreme Court's majority decision to overrule Roe v. Wade and federal protections for abortion care prompted swift reactions in cities across the country. We'll hear from those who hit the streets in Denver. We'll also speak with Colorado Ceasefire about what a Supreme Court ruling on a New York law could mean for state and local attempts to regulate firearms. And CityCast Denver takes us on a walking tour of the queer history of the city's Capitol Hill neighborhood. At the bottom of the hour, we'll get an update from the BBC News headlines, then have the Hightower Lowdown. After that, I will speak with Imani Gandhi and Jessica Piclo of the Rewire News Group. Both women are trained attorneys who shifted their legal lens to reporting on reproductive rights. We'll discuss the legal implications of the Supreme Court's ruling to gut federal guarantees to access abortion care. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Leland Rucker will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Chiara De Mare.
The Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup last night in Game 6 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. The state hockey team beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 2-1. This is the first time Colorado has won the Stanley Cup since 2001. The parade to celebrate the win will be this Thursday, starting at 9 a.m. in Denver's Civic Center Park. Demonstrators hit the streets of Denver and other Colorado cities over the weekend to protest the Supreme Court's gutting of Roe v. Wade, the landmark legal ruling that protected nationwide access to safe and legal abortions for 50 years. The Colorado legislature passed a Reproductive Health Equity Act earlier this year, guaranteeing the right to use contraception and access to abortion within Colorado, despite lengthy delay tactics from Republican lawmakers. Boulder Valley Women's Health Center responded to Friday's Supreme Court ruling by announcing it will assist with out-of-state abortions. The clinic states it will also help patients find financial resources when traveling. We'll have more on the local reactions to the gutting of the federal abortion rights after the headlines. Overturning Roe v. Wade was not the only controversial decision to come out of the Supreme Court last week. On Thursday, the Supreme Court handed down a decision to continue to protect Colorado's concealed carry law. NYRPA v. Bruin, according to a press release, shot down a New York law that requires concealed gun carriers to demonstrate a need for the weapon. More on that ruling later in the program. CDPHE partners with Children's Hospital Colorado to add under 5 COVID-19 vaccines to community vaccine clinics. KGNU's Luis Lacone has more.
Since the FDA approved the COVID-19 vaccine for children under 5 in June, the state is working to make them available to parents. Mobile vaccine clinics across the metro area will open later this week, offering both Moderna and Pfizer vaccines for children above the age of 6 months. If families are interested in getting their children vaccinated, they should visit the CDPHE's website to schedule an appointment at a clinic or the Children's Hospital website for information regarding any vaccine clinics. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment and Colorado School of Public Health released a model on Friday, which estimates a high amount of people infected with COVID-19 in Colorado. Their model states that as of mid-June, more than 1% of the population is currently infectious. According to a press release from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, states that the most recent epidemiological data for Colorado shows infections and hospital demands are no longer increasing. CDC approves Moderna vaccine for children and adolescents. KGNU's Lily Noble has more.
The CDC approved the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine for individuals 6 to 17 years of age last week. The decision comes on the heels of the approval of COVID-19 vaccines for children 6 months old to 5 years old 6 days prior and follows the May approval of the Pfizer vaccine for individuals older than 5. Just as with adults, the CDC recommends that 6 to 17-year-olds receive 2 doses of the Moderna shot between 4 and 8 weeks apart, with a third dose for immunocompromised adolescents. Health Department officials say vaccine providers will begin to offer the Moderna vaccines for children aged 6 to 11 this week. They continue to recommend parents and guardians vaccinate their children against COVID-19 before the return to school in the fall. Visit covid19.colorado.gov/vaccine finder to find a place to receive a vaccine and for more information. For KGNU, I'm Lily Noble.
People for Bikes and Trike Bicycles released their annual list for top cities to bike in the U.S. last week. Boulder was ranked 7th overall and 3rd in the medium city category, the same ranking as last year. The Bicycle Network Analysis Tool provides the basis for each city score, demonstrating how easy it is for residents to get to key services like grocery stores, employment, healthcare, and more, said Rebecca Davies, City Ratings Program Director. For the first time since the start of the pandemic, the Cherry Creek Arts Festival is back in Denver, with over 250 artists and featuring 13 different categories of art. Guests can get tickets to a concert on Saturday with Toon Yards headlining. Tickets for the concert begin at $25. General admission to the festival is free. Today is slated to be nice and sunny across the Front Range. Denver has a high of 85 and a low of 55. Fort Collins with a high of 86 and a low of 49. And last, but certainly not least, Boulder has a high of 81 and a low of 52. For KGNU, I'm Chiara DeMari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Hours after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark decision that protected the right to access safe and legal abortion services, Denverites took to the streets Friday evening to register their dissent. The gutting of Roe v. Wade occurred as the League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan grassroots organization that works to protect and expand voting rights, was in downtown Denver for its annual conference. League of Women Voter members joined hundreds of other Coloradans at the state capitol for a spontaneous demonstration. KGNU's Verity Matthews was there.
I am here with a bunch of different representatives from the League of Women Voters Colorado, as well as nationally. First, we'd like to speak with Dr.
Deborah Turner.
Dr. Deborah Turner, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for joining us on KGNU. Can you please tell me what today is for you?
Today is a reckoning. We have to understand that women's rights and American rights are under attack. This is just a stepping stone to the loss of many civil rights if we don't do what we need to do. We at the League believe truly, truly in a women's right to choose. But more important, we believe that every citizen should have to make right to choose the way they want to live, who they want to live with, how they want to live, and the autonomy to their own body. I'm a physician. I understand the importance of your own personal autonomy. I am also a abortion provider. I am associate medical director for one of the Planned Parenthood affiliates. I have sat with the women who have come to us. I've held their hands. I've shared their tears. And I understand how they make these decisions very, very seriously. We are going to fight this because there is no way that we are going to become second-class citizens and turn into a country that has no democracy and no right to freedom. This is about freedom. This is about America. This is not a partisan issue. This is an American issue, and we are going to fight. Thank you.
Dr. Turner, thank you so much for joining us.
So my name is Sharon Davis, and I'm the Colorado League's vice president, incoming vice president. And I'm an abortion activist and have been so. I moved to Colorado from Ireland. And in Ireland, we worked with an all grassroots campaign to change the Constitution. So today is a rough day. But there is power in coalition. There is power in saying the word abortion. There is power in seeing everybody's strengths that come to the table and using those to change this incredibly unjust decision.
What does the League plan to do in the face of this historic overturning of women's civil rights?
Okay, at the state level, we'll be working. This past legislative session, we got abortion codified into state statute. We'll be getting it onto the ballot in 2024 and strongly promoting that.
As a constitutional amendment?
That's correct.
My name is Virginia K. Salomon. I'm the CEO of the League of Women Voters of the United States. Today, women feel like they've taken a step back. We have gone back 50 years in history. So many women have grown up in a world where abortion access was just the rule of law for them. They know nothing different. But what we want to tell women today is that the fight is not over. It is just beginning. There are plenty of organizations throughout the country, including the League of Women Voters, where they can get support. There is an organization called Plan C that will help to mail abortion pills to women around the country. Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and many other organizations, including the National Women's Law Center, are also fighting to protect women's reproductive rights and access. The other thing that we want to remind people of is that the filibuster, the Jim Crow filibuster, which has prevented civil rights legislation in this country, has also an impediment to enforcing and having good legislation at the federal level to protect a woman's health care and a woman's right to abortion. And so we're asking everybody not only to fight to end the filibuster, but also to contact their legislators and other legislators around the country to make their voices heard and the demand that Congress put federal laws in place to protect a woman's right to choose.
We won't go back!
We will fight back!
We won't go back!
We will fight back!
We won't go back!
We will fight back!
The overruling of 50 years of protected legal access to abortion services wasn't the only controversial decision handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court last week. A 6-3 majority ruled in favor of the New York Rifle and Pistol Association in a challenge to the state's concealed carry law. Joining me now live to discuss the details of what this may imply for other states seeking to regulate firearms is Tom Mauser of Colorado Ceasefire. Good morning, and thanks for coming on the program.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
SCOTUS blog describes this ruling as the court's first significant decision on gun rights in over a decade. And what the ruling did was strike down a New York state law that required those seeking concealed carry permits to demonstrate a need to be armed. First, what is your organization's reaction to this ruling?
Well, we were very, very disappointed in it, but frankly, not shocked by it. We expected a court like this to make this kind of ruling in favor of the gun lobby.
In a press release in reaction to the ruling, Colorado Ceasefire indicates that it's not so much that it will directly impact Colorado because concealed carry laws here don't have that requirement to demonstrate need, but rather the concern stems from the broader implications the ruling may have. Explain more about that.
Yes, sure. In the ruling, the actual ruling said that, quote, to justify a firearm regulation, the government must demonstrate that the regulation is consistent with the nation's tradition of firearm regulation. That is a very broad statement. That could mean so many. I mean, in the case of New York, they've had this concealed carry law for over 100 years. Is that not a part of the nation's history, or at least of that state's tradition? And yet they ignored that. They're essentially saying, let's look back at the history of firearm regulation. Well, for the first 100 years of this nation, when we had muskets, there was no firearm regulation, essentially. So they seem to be saying, making a statement that they really don't really favor firearm regulation.
Last year, after the mass shooting at the King Supers here in Boulder, Colorado Ceasefire worked with the state legislature to pass 6 gun violence prevention measures. How are those laws panning out in the implementation stage?
Well, we've seen most of those implemented, and we have seen the creation of an Office of Gun Violence Prevention in the state. We've now seen that local law enforcement is required to take more action to remove firearms from a domestic abuser. So we have seen, we've reacted really to the problems that we've seen, the loopholes that we've seen action on those. And I think this ruling calls that into question. We have a red flag law, for example. Well, in the history of America, no, there haven't been red flag laws, but we've seen the need for that. And they are saving lives, the states that have red flag laws. And I think now we see that called into question by this court ruling. Oh, that's not part of the history and the tradition of firearm regulation in America. Very disturbing.
So in other words, are you worried, are you and Colorado Ceasefire worried that the implications of this case that was decided on Thursday will hinder the state's rights to regulate firearms within their state lines?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for example, here in Colorado, we overturned a law, repealed a law that said that local governments couldn't establish a gun regulation, a firearm regulation, stronger than what the state has. And Boulder, for example, and a number of cities in Boulder have been taking steps to create some laws like that. That will be now called into question. And in particular, one of the things that some of them are looking at is where you can carry a concealed firearm. Well, in this ruling, they called into question what is a sensitive place where you cannot carry a concealed weapon. And they seem to want it so that you can carry a concealed weapon nearly everywhere. They don't want something written that's more broad. Well, that could mean that you can't, that our local governments and our state government can't outlaw concealed weapons in certain places. What is the definition of a sensitive place?
Tom Mauser of Colorado Ceasefire, we're just about out of time, but is there anything else that you would like to add or that our listeners should know?
I think that people need to understand that really when the gun lobby is pushing issues like this, it's really about sales. It's really about selling. They would really like to have the loosest possible regulations on concealed weapons, because if people can carry concealed weapons more readily, that means more gun sales. That's what it's really all about for them. And we shouldn't be going back to the old West. There's no proof that having more people carrying concealed weapons is going to make us safer. If it did, we'd be the safest nation on the earth, because we have the most concealed carry persons in the world.
My guest today has been Tom Mauser of Colorado Ceasefire. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Denver held its annual Pride Parade yesterday, drawing thousands to Cheeseman Park and through the Capitol Hill neighborhood. The area has provided refuge and a sense of community to queer folks for decades, though the neighborhood composition has been shifting. Ahead of Pride Fest, CityCast Denver host Bree Davies and producer Paul Caroli joined comics artist and historian B. Aaron Cole on a walking tour of Cap Hill, as seen through a queer historical lens. B. Aaron Cole has researched and illustrated a map with markers from the state capitol to Cheeseman Park, but it's the flipped homes, demolished buildings, and long-gone bars in between that tell the deeper story of the neighborhood's vibrant LGBTQ+ history.
So we're right now at 1200 Broadway at the History Colorado Center, And this is the first stop in the exhibit tour. And the reason I wanted to do this is, first off, when people come in the door, I want them to know, first off, they are in a historically queer neighborhood, a place that has a lot of queer history. But I also want to talk about the fact that Broadway, for a long time, and actually still today, has had a lot of gay bars, a lot of kind of community meeting spaces, and other things. And in the 1970s, in the middle of this block, actually right where the parking garage is, was a bar called the Broadway Lounge.
Okay.
And in the 70s, it was a really kind of important place. It was kind of a cabaret. It was a bar. It was a meeting space. But the thing that makes it really important is the fact that Denver police targeted patrons of that bar and many other bars up and down Broadway to basically harass them. So if you were a patron coming in and out of the Broadway, you know, and if you were there on an unlucky night, you could get a jaywalking ticket trying to cross Broadway or cross 12th.
And jaywalking's one of those infamous
it's just like, it's a low level harassment saying, we are keeping tabs on your community. We just want to let you know that we don't want you to feel welcome and safe in Denver.
Yeah. This neighborhood being the center of queer life in Denver, is that true anymore?
That's a really good question. And I don't know if I have like a good answer, because I don't think anyone has a good answer.
Yeah.
Because it kind of means like, what do you mean by center?
Sure.
Because it still is. I mean, it's obviously a queer-coded neighborhood for a lot of people. There's still a lot of queer people living in Capitol Hill. But the question is, are they moving here because they're just like, oh, this is where the action is. This is where, you know, X Bar is.
This is a city close, you know.
Or Blush and Blue. Or is it because like, oh, this is where I can find something comparatively cheap.
Sure. Relatively, however we want to frame it. Yeah. What does zoning maybe still have to do with how we get communities in certain areas of our city?
Well, so this is a really tough correlation causation problem.
Sure.
But I think the easiest way to do it is that this is a landscape that in the 1950s Denver urban planners disliked very much. They wanted to basically retrofit the city to make it more attractive to white families with children, the people that they thought they were losing to Lakewood and Inglewood and all of those places. So they actually tried to use the 1956 zoning code to basically suburbanize Denver. You know, again, like what you actually see here is built before that.
Yeah.
But the city is trying to use its zoning to keep this from happening in other neighborhoods. And you start to see in the 1970s, you know, especially thinking about the neighborhoods that are zoned R0, which is the most restrictive form of residential zoning in Denver. That is the residential zoning where you cannot live together
unless everyone
is related by blood or marriage or adoption. It's like Congress Park, which the south part of Congress Park is zoned R0, Park Hill, and some others. You start to see like people who like, I don't actually know what their relationship was, but two women trying to live together in a house in Congress Park. And the neighbors reporting them to the city, saying, this is a neighborhood that is about family values. You start to see, like, there's, like, two men who bought a house together in Park Hill. And the neighborhood is like, oh, you're not legally related. You can't live in Park Hill. And you start to see that, you know, the neighborhoods that have that kind of very strict zoning restriction start using it against same-gender couples moving into their neighborhoods. And Capitol Hill doesn't have any of that zoning. And that doesn't change.
And we just had this battle again!
And that doesn't change until the group living ordinance. So.
Which was last year! Well, that was the repeal of what had happened in the last couple of years. But we're continuing to have that same fight.
Yeah, it is. It's really like this kind of battle of like, you know, that's a battle of like who can live together in a house, which you shouldn't think is like a city concern. Why is this something Denver should care about?
Yeah, I think that exactly.
Anyway, so ever since then, there's always pride events going on in Cheeseman, whether it's gathering for the parade, having concerts, just having like kind of, you know, like picnics and other things. So in some ways, like the Cheeseman part of the story is kind of about gathering, it's about community, it's about kind of joy. Because, like, you know, if you're here on a Saturday,
it's pop.
And even if there's tons of bros, it's still like there's all these people gathered and they're having a good time. And maybe people are roller skating or tango dancing.
There's like a queer roller skating contingent I associate
yeah,
very
or
much with the park.
Last time I walked through here, somebody was getting pictures taken for their quinceanera. You know, it's like
it's a park. It's a public gathering space that serves all these functions.
And it's not like, you know, all sweaty exercise people like Washington Park.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Chiara De Mare, Luis Licon, Lily Noble, Alexis Kenyon, Verity Matthews, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower. In today's Public Affair, my guests will be Imani Gandhi and Jessica Piclo, senior editors of Rewire News Group. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.